If there's one writer who's identified with the Mississippi River, it's Mark Twain. He grew up in Hannibal, Missouri, right on the river's edge, and as a young man, he worked as a steamboat pilot. Years later, he wrote The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, the novel that turned the Mississippi into myth, and also created one of the most enduring controversies in American literary history. Twain played with a lot of 19th century racial stereotypes. His portrait of the escaped slave, Jim, can be pretty hard to take today. But Twain scholar Andrew Levy says the book is actually anti-racist, and that when it was first published, the big controversy was about Twain's depiction of wild children. Steve Paulson caught up with him.
Andy, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is one of the most celebrated books in American literature. It is also one of the most controversial. It has been banned by many libraries and schools, mainly for its very frequent use of the N-word. And there are a lot of concerns about how Mark Twain wrote about race. Do you find the book hard to read?
I find it hard to teach. Its racial history is incredibly complex. I think you can make very strong arguments that it's a remarkably forward-looking, anti-racist text, still in many ways ahead of our time.
Anti-racist, even though it's targeted for being racist.
Well, because from other angles, you can also see a book which transports some of the unalloyed racisms of the 19th century into the present.
So what you're saying then is this is not just a work of literature. I mean, you don't just necessarily read this for fun. I mean, you have to unpack the history.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Mark Twain at the time, or shortly after, was actually one of the founding members of the American Folklore Society. So he traveled back to the Mississippi River in 1881, 20 years after he last saw it, in fact. He took a steamboat tour down from Missouri down to New Orleans, and he took incredible notes the entire time. He listened to the way people talked. He looked at and was reminded of cities and bends in the river that he hadn't seen for 20 years. And in many ways, that trip, which became the book Life in the Mississippi, also recharged his batteries for writing Huckleberry Finn.
Well, we should talk about that because, I mean, most of his life, Mark Twain actually lived out east, and yet we always associate him with the Mississippi River, with growing up in Hannibal, Missouri.
Right.
And I guess I'm wondering how central that was to who he became and the art he created.
The thing about it, he did grow up in Hannibal, you know, at the time when it was a bit of a frontier town. And he got out first chance he could. He got out at 17. He didn't even tell his mother. He just went and left. And so when he becomes a steamboat pilot in the late 1850s, when he's in his early to mid-20s, he's actually been around a bit. And he's coming back to the Mississippi again in his early 20s because it is, in fact, one of America's cosmopolitan hubs. I'm saying he went there not because he was this bumpkin. He went there because it was a happening place in the 1850s.
Yeah. Mark Twain obviously spent a lot of time along the Mississippi River. He worked on riverboats. And I guess I'm wondering if he did that, if the river was so central to his work, just because he was very familiar with it, or was it something more than that?
I think the river just had everything. He did grow up with it. You know, in Huckleberry Finn, you see all the different things he thought the river was. It was this amazing natural force. It was godlike. I mean, it could take life. It could give life. It could change its force at a moment's notice. We see houses and boats wrecked on it. But it's also a place of social ferment and social experimentation. It's a place where maybe races can come together on a little raft. It's a place where there's a lot of lawlessness. The Mississippi River of the 1830s and 1840s, we think of it right now as a kind of a center of the country place, but back then it was an edge of the country kind of place. It was a border. It had tremendous, commercial vitality. It was everything. And he was simply smart enough, and he was very smart, just to see what a powerful symbol he had.
One thing I'm curious about is Sam Clemens' pen name, Mark Twain. Where did that come from?
Oh, well, it is what was shouted out loud on a steamboat when the river was about to get too shallow or too deep. It's 12 foot of depth.
Wait, so Twain means 12 feet of depth?
Mark Twain means 2 6-foot segments. But again, he loved the idea that listening to him was trouble. When he had lecture tours, supposed to would say the trouble begins at 8. And so Mark Twain literally means you're out of trouble, or it literally means you're just getting into it. So it's a great name for him.
Well, and I have this image of Mark Twain, or Sam Clemens, as he was when he was growing up, living in Hannibal as kind of this wild boy, you know, sort of, you know, running around the river, hanging out with these somewhat questionable characters, and, you know, sort of that whole outlaw culture of the river. Was that actually his childhood?
Yes and no. He was hard to control. And he was in and out of school. He was a terrible student, and he was constantly pulling pranks. He was maybe a little bit more of that kind of, I want to say, bullying theatrical jerk that Tom Sawyer was, rather than the kind of wild child Huck Finn was. But he played with kids like Huckleberry Finn.
One of the things that I found fascinating about your book on Huck Finn is that when this book first came out in the mid-1880s, it generated a fair amount of controversy, but not because of its portrayal of race relations. I mean, the way we read it today, it was because of the way Mark Twain wrote about childhood, and especially those kind of wild, feral boys.
Right. No, but at the time there was, they called it a boy crisis in America, and we've had variations of it ever since. And the nature of the crisis was that children, especially boys, being exposed to violent popular culture, were themselves turning violent and committing crimes. And that Huckleberry Finn really cut too close to the bone. He's a pretty lawless kid. And Mark Twain checked all the boxes. There was, you know, fanatical devotion to ending truancy at the time, and Huck Finn loves to be a truant, and there was a fanatical devotion against having kids smoke tobacco at the time, and Huck, you know, lights up on page 2 of Huckleberry Finn. So it was like, you know, Mark Twain went out of his way to say, you know, here's your wild child, love your wild child, don't lock them all up.
So I want to come back to this question of how we should think about this book in terms of race, because, I mean, as we've said, I mean, that was not the controversy back when it first came out in the 1880s. Mm-hmm. In fact, you say that basically no book reviewers even commented on how race was depicted in this book. And there were a lot of black newspapers at the time, and then they never even wrote about that.
That's right. And they could have, but they avoided it. And in all the major reviews of the book, I saw maybe one reference in a San Francisco newspaper, which said that the portrayal of slavery was amusing.
So what do we make of Huck's river companion, the slave Jim? Because on the surface, it seems that he's kind of ignorant about a lot of things. Where do we go with that?
Well, you can do a lot with it or not. You can just take it on the surface. My students, even now, have a very hard time reading his voice because of the effort Mark Twain puts into making it look and sound like an authentic African-American dialect. But it makes him look and sound stupider as well. We can hear Huck clearly. We can't hear Jim clearly. And that conceals him, effaces him, and makes him look like, you know, an inferior figure. He's superstitious. He's easily frightened. You know, he looks stupid as a result, but barely underneath, you see a really smart, even calculating human being faced with a very awkward situation, which is that he is trying to free himself, and his companion and his salvation is this kid who one minute seems to be totally sympathetic towards him, and the next minute is playing dirty pranks on him and can sell him out at a moment's notice.
So he needs Huck's help. I mean, his life depends on that.
Yeah, and you have to really put yourself in Jim's mind and see things from his point of view. And when you do, Jim just radiates intelligence. I think it's stunning how much you can see it, but it's also stunning how much Twain concealed it. And if Twain is guilty of anything, he's guilty of exactly that. He's also guilty, to be honest, of not realizing how much that N-word, even in his time, probably was something that he didn't necessarily need to play with.
Yeah. And we should point out that, I mean, Mark Twain was very familiar with racism, with the institution of slavery. I mean, when he was growing up in Hannibal, I mean, Missouri was still a slave state, right?
That's right. Yeah, and he was, you know, up until the age of 17, 18, he was amazingly racist. Racist for his time, even. His letters when he's 17 or 18, they're just awful. But he changes really quickly. He goes to New York City, and again, that's a sign. New York City was as cosmopolitan and multiracial. You know, it was the place you went if you were actually trying to change yourself. He traveled all over the world. He opened himself up to other cultures. He remade himself.
Hmm. Well, the other thing that you mentioned is, I mean, there's minstrelsy in the book, and that was very popular at that time. I mean, during Mark Twain's lifetime. And you say that that he was fascinated by it. I mean, you know, like white performers dressing up in blackface and making a joke out of the whole thing. You say Mark Twain was both fascinated and was deeply ambivalent about it.
Yeah, he was extremely fascinated by blackface minstrelsy, which was, you know, it was the rock and roll of the 1800s. It was a massive and popular culture form. It wasn't marginal. There are actually minstrel show routines, which to a modern reader are a lot like, you know, vaudeville routines, Abbott and Costello kind of stuff, are built into Huckleberry Finn. What's interesting to me is that that's exceptionally like what, say, Elvis Presley or the Rolling Stones did. How much the idea of imitating African-American culture and putting a white face on it and stealing it in many ways was so much part and parcel of the 50s, 60s, 70s to the current day.
You're saying that Mark Twain played with ideas about race, I mean, which are so loaded today, but lots of people do it.
Yeah, I'm saying is that he was, you know, it's no coincidence that Huckleberry Finn becomes a big smash hit in the 50s and the 60s. At the same time, Elvis Presley, the Rolling Stones, and others are also smash hits. It's exact same logic to the portrayal of Jim, or even Huck Finn, who essentially humanizes himself by sympathizing and empathizing with this African-American next to him, but needs the African-American next to him, so to speak, as an imprisoned quantity in order to use it to define himself. That's unbelievably like America in the 1950s and 1960s.
Andrew Levy is the author of Huck Finn's America. He talked with Steve Paulson.